Gimel, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Beis. The Pasuk says in page 839, on that day Hashem says, I'm going to wipe out the names of the Atzavim, men from the land.
What's the page number, please?
Page 839 on that day, Hashem, I'm going to wipe out the Atzavim, the idols. An idol is called an Etzav, means sadness. You think it gives you happiness? The truth is, it gives you sadness because it can't deliver. And they taught us in camp, when we were camp counselor 100 years ago, never threaten a camper with a threat that you cannot carry out. That's a law in life. When you make a threat to a child, to a student, as a politician, as punishment, never ever make a threat if you do not plan and do not have the power to carry out. You may think you can get away with it. It's not true. Children learn, people learn very quickly that when they go over the red line and nothing happens, that's it. You lose your legitimacy 100%, and then it's a free for all.
Obviously, it's true of nations as well.
100%. Remember.
Yes.
Who put up that sign, the red line?
Obama.
He crossed the red line, right? So that's how it goes. Let's go further. Hashem says, "In that day, I'm going to remove the avodah zarah, the neviim, the sheker, and the ruach hatoma." Pasuk gimel, "Vayaki navi yish oid ani avir haneviim aval imiya choyte echad sheinavi b'ruach sheker v'chasev yema ki b'ruach hakel nibei." If there will be a false prophet, the yisrael b'zman hazahu tia bohem deya v'haskel. And if the Jewish people will recognize who this false prophet is, Sheyakiru is Divrei HaMitznabe, Hahu, Im Yihiyu Divrei Emes or Divrei Sheker, V'yoyimru Elov Av V'imo, Shehem Yolidov, Lo Sichye. If they will chas v'shalom be amongst the Jewish people a false prophet, and it will be clear that this person is causing damage to the Jewish people, so the parents of this individual will approach their child and will say to him, "Lo sichia, you our child will not live. Ki sheker dibarta b'shem Hashem v'yoledav hu toisefes be'ur." This just an elaboration. Ki kvar zocha. We already said the father and the mother, so there's no need to repeat this sentence. It's just nothing more, according to the Radaklim, just a poetic expansion of the Pasuk. And now we're on page 841. Okay, 841. Meir, I can hear you in the wind. I can hear that wind sound. And they will stab him. Avivimo yakuhu v'yiftzuuhu liyasroi. Now, oiperush udikaru yaharguhu kumosha amar lo sichyev yonasantegim v'yechadun be avogi v'ime yechadun. I do not know what that word means. You know what that word means? Maybe we'll see soon. V'yechadun. I'm not sure what that means, but v'yechadun, yes, the stab. I think it's not really telling us what it means, what it means in the Targum, but the Radak has a dilemma. He's not certain if the word here means that the parents will actually execute him, or does it mean that they will chastise him? We discussed this yesterday. It's a very big chiddush to say that a parent will go so far to actually take the life of their child because he has spoken words of falsehood. Pasuk Dalit, on that day they will be put to shame. Makar b'tosefes tav. Okay, the word bina vasoi is a noun, with an added tav. Makar means prophecy with an added tav. Navi, but we're adding here another tav. V'chein b'mishnah v'halo b'mama echad yochal lihi barois, and there was biria. There the word lihi barois, there the word in the Mishnah should really have been said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he so wished, could have created the world in one day. And the word, it should lihi barei, lehi bo rei. Yet in this expression, there is an extra suf, lehi bo rois. Next,
velo yilbishu. The word veyechadun reminds me, nasa besaro chidudim chidudim.
Yes.
It's litru.
Something sharp.
Sharp, okay. They will.
Veyechad litru.
Yichad yisro, chidudim chidudim.
So Aviv and Imo will feel the same feeling. Terrible.
Udikoluhu.
However.
Yeah.
To kill him.
Sorry? They will kill him? Wait, what did you say? In according to the Targum, what does it mean Udikoluhu? They're gonna perforate his body with sharp holes. They're gonna shoot him with a lot of bullets. They're gonna perforate his body like a sieve, like what they did to Yoshiyahu. I don't know. I don't know what it means. The Radak himself says he has a dilemma. Does it mean they'll actually execute him? Like what it says in the Pasuk above, that the parents will say to their child, you shall not live. Or does it mean when they say you're not going to live, we don't mean again, Mama's going to kill you. We mean we're going to take out our strap and you're an embarrassment to us. But it doesn't mean the parents are actually going to kill him. They're going to chastise him. And here the Targum is saying, he's saying the word yichadu lashav chidudim. They're going to, Yisrael was filled with his flesh, shriveled.
They're going to stab him. They're going to stab him.
But does it mean they're going to stab him to the degree where he's going to die? I don't know. It says they're going to inject into his flesh sharp items, sharp objects. What is the nature of these sharp objects, and what is the outcome? Yeah. Doesn't say. Or maybe we'll see another mafarsh will shed light on what the Targum really means to say. Sometimes you see another mafarsh, they say an idea, and then you get insight into what the Targum really meant to say. Any event, let's now go further. And over here it says that he's going to be put to shame. He's going to be put to shame. Over here, let's go further. Over here, and the word behina of oisoi. This is an unusual form of the word. It really should say behina of oi. Behina of oi. We would have been much more comfortable if the pasuk would have said bein avoy when he gives all the prophecy, but that's not what it says in the pasuk. It says bein avoy soy, and the Radak tells us that's a style of writing. Sometimes you add a suf at the end of a word in order to enhance, to embellish the word, to make the word sound a little bit better. This is a very interesting idea in Hebrew language. If you like this in English, you can't do this. In English, there's no such thing in English. You never heard of this. You have words. Oh, you want to make the word sound a little more fluffy, to sound a little bit nicer, so you add some letters to the word. You never ever heard such a thing. The spell checker would put a big red line underneath that word, and your speech writer would say it's unacceptable, it's an embarrassment for your position.
You're talking about behinavo?
Yeah, it should really say behinavoi. But what did we do? We added a suf. It just makes it sound a little bit nicer. Behinavoi. So any quotes, gives it.
We have the Yeshua Hashem behimatzo. The same kind of
thing. And he gives another reason.
While he was doing it.
Right, okay, right. And but the extra stuff is superfluous. And he gives one more example. He gives an example in Pirkei Avos. V'haloi b'maymar echad yachol lihi bar roi soy. So the Radak says that's not really correct. It really should say lihi bar roi. It shouldn't say the Liboroi Soi. Why did it say that? Why did the Tan of the Mishnah add in that letter? Because that's a style of writing. It's a style that appears to be, at least in our limited knowledge, at least my limited knowledge of language, in English you never hear of such a thing. In English, in the English language, there's one way to use a word. You have no right to go, you don't find words being the same exact words for the style purposes. You add letters and you embellish the word by adding more syllables that make it sound and rhyme and flow better in a sentence. There's no such thing in English, not that I know of, and I don't know about other languages, but it would seem that it's not very likely. In Lashon HaKodesh, there's an incredible amount of complexity and flexibility. And I'll just give you an example. I'll give you one example, the example of Zalman Henna. Of Zalman Henna, this is not, you're not going to find his in this Siddur. We always talk about this when you the first word of the Megillah. We always come back to this. Is it vayihi bimei Achashverosh, or is it vayihi bimei Achashverosh? I would imagine everyone here is used to hearing the Baal Kriya say vayihi. they make the yud into a shva na. That's really wrong. And in fact, I don't think you're going to find any chumash or any chumash that actually the chumashim that do indicate when a letter should be a shva na or a shva nach. There is no chumash that I'm aware of today that, though they have different symbols for shva na and a shva nach. You see in this card, in the Al-Nichi card, see Al-Nich, I have different symbols. I have, when it's a shva na, it's a shva na, it's two diamonds under the letter. And when it's a shva nach, it's two circles. I don't know if you can see the word, let me see if it's called like mizbechecha. I don't know if you can see the word mizbechecha. The word mizbechecha, there are two shvas back to back. Miz, that's a shva nach. Be is a shva na, l'choladeus. But what about uvne? You see the word uvne. So I deliberately did not want to tamper with anything. I left it as a shva nach. Even though many people say uvne Yerushalayim. Even but technically it's uvne. It's a shva nach. So along came up Zalman Hena. He was a very controversial person. He was one of the biggest Bali Dikduk. He was a very young man, and he got into a lot of trouble because of the way he did things. But he held that what's called Mishipur Halashon, that in order to enhance the pronunciation, in order to bring out a letter, a syllable, it is permitted to recite a shva na. A shva noch as a shva na. Many, not all the time. Not all the time, but sometimes. And he had a whole system to this. And he held that that's what you should do, because otherwise you're going to swallow the letter and it's just not going to, it's going to sound yeshivish. And even though the Vilna Gaon was much before him, much greater, and he didn't hold from this. All of the Sidurim we have today are like the Vilna Gaon. They do not have. There's no. I never saw a printed Siddur that indicates a Shva Na for according to the rule book of Rav Zalman Hena, even though most of the Bali Diktok today, who are experts, do follow Rav Zalman Hena, namely Rav Pam, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he was a very Bali Diktok, Rabbi Belsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and Yibadu L'chaim L'chaim, Rabbi Reisman. So very big people, they all pronounce it U-V-Ne Yerushalayim, Va-Yehi. Okay, that's not, don't confuse this with El Milara. It's Milara. Vayihi, it's Milara, but the Yud is a Shva. No, why? The same exact principle of what we just learned in the Radak. That's why I'm telling you, because the Radak over here is telling us that when you recite a word, the Hebrew language allows for you, or at least the ones who wrote these psukim, to embellish the word. Okay, to embellish the word and add to the word syllables. Add extra letters to the same exact word in order for it to have more of an oomph, have more flavor in its pronunciation. So even though the pasuk over here should have said bihi, the pasuk should have said bihi nov oy,
yeah,
for whatever reason, in order to embellish the pronunciation of the word, we added, we threw in a sof bihi. No ve oi soy. It gives it more emphasis. That's an awesome chiddush, because in the English language you don't do that. You get an F if you're in ninth grade and you try to play a game like that. And as an example, another example, as an extension of this principle, where words in the Hebrew language are an allowance to embellish the word in ways that are not really correct, that you can say such words, is Reb Zalman Hena telling us that every time you have a shva after a shurak or after a patach, you are permitted and you should pronounce that shva, not like it really should be noch, but no. And thus, well, the first word of the Megillah is not vayehi, but it's vayehi. You notice the difference? If you do vayehi, the yud is a shva noch. But if you do vayehi, it's a shva no. The yud gets a life.
If it changes the interpretation.
It does not change the interpretation. The only danger is it's still milara. Don't emphasize the yud to the degree where the emphasis becomes on the yud and make it milael. That's forbidden. Don't do va yehi. That's horrible. That's terrible. Va yehi, it's all the emphasis is on the hey, but you're permitted and you should, lefira of Zalman Henna, to emphasize the yud. What gave you the right to do that? That's not correct. That's not the rules of grammar. The rules of grammar are a shva that follows a patach is a shva noch. It's a shva noch, not a shva no. So what gives you the right to do this? Rav Zalman Henna said you can do it mishum shipur haloshon, the beautification of your enunciation. Your pronunciation and your enunciation. Where do you find the makar from Zalman Henna to do such a thing? And the answer is this pasuk right here, this radak right here. The word is behinov oy. In fact, that's what it says in the pasuk above, behinov oy. And here in pasuk dalit, it is behinov oy soy. Okay, Rav Meir, you got to turn off the
Meaning to that.
Yeah, good morning.
Because it says yevoshu ish. Mech hezyono, behinave oto, the shtei milim, shekasher hu menave.
Okay, so you're saying a different idea. You are suggesting is that it's a different word. Okay, Rabbi Kalman is suggesting is
two words together.
Okay, you're right. Enochrami. Okay, we have to delve. Okay, correct. We have to delve into the depth of the word, but the radak. Certainly, there must be other commentators that say what you are saying. I'm not doubting that. But the Radak here doesn't want to work with that approach. The Radak over here is telling us that it's exactly the same word as Behinov Oy. And if you want to say it's two words, whatever you're going to say by Behinov Oy, you're going to say Behinov Oy Soy. But Mishum Shipur Haloshoin. And this is a precedent. This is a very powerful precedent for Rav Zalman Henna to go so far, and he really has influenced many, many people. All of the big Bali Kriya today, the top tier of Bali Kriya today, all follow Rav Zalman Henna. They don't follow the Gra. They don't do what it says in the Sidur and in the Chumash. Because like I told you, there is no Sidur or Chumash which do emphasize Shva No by having lines on top of the word of the letter, of that letter, or having different size, shape of dots. They do indicate, a lot of the Siddurim today are very, very good. They do indicate when it's a shvano, when it's a shvanoch, but they do it according to what's called the Shita of the Gura. If you open up the English art scroll Siddur and read the Hakdamah, it says there that our vowelization is following the opinion of the Gura, the Vilna Gaon. What's that all about? They mean to say, and not like Rav Zalman Henna. That's what that sentence is all about. Okay, let's go further. Okay, Rav Chol, you want to say something?
No, I'm just thinking of by Yehi, you know, the interpretation that of
Vai.
It's by Yehi. So,
you rooting
the combination.
So Michal is saying that we're ruining, by doing like a Zalman Henna with the word Vai, you're ruining the Mamori Chazal. Because Chazal Darshan, Vai is Oive. The same way today we say Oive. So Vai was the equivalent of an expression of grief. So if we're going to read like a Zalman Henna, and we're going to say Vai Yehi, you have destroyed the Mamori Chazal.
So
Rav Michal is loyal to the Vilna Gaon. He's a real Litvak, a real Misnaget. What? Yeah.
Zalman Henna, what period of time is he
I think at the end of the 18th century. No, there's no siddur today, even in the 21st century, that is printed. I never saw a siddur that has printed the shvanos for. No such thing. Okay, this is something. Let's go further. This is just a little interesting diktuk thing. Once in a while, it's worthy to learn a little bit of diktuk. All right, let's go further. Now we go to page. We're up to page 841. We're up to page 841. Pasuk vav. I'm sorry. Pasuk hey. In the radak. The Amar Yoyma Halashel Oisa Ayin Nivu Asai Yichachesh VeYoymar Loi Navi Anoichi. In those days, times of Mashiach, when the false prophets will confess that they are charlatans, they will say to them, Nunu, you have something to say now? And they will say, No, we quit. We gave up that profession long ago. We acknowledge that I'm a false prophet. I'm just an ordinary guy. I have a job. I work in a gas station. I fill up the car. I'm just Hiknani. Limdani liyos roye mikne umisaseg bavidas vadama. I work for the ground. I work for those cars that move on the ground. I fill them up. That's my profession. I'm a shepherd. I'm a shepherd to the automobiles. I'm no longer a rabbi. I'm no longer a rabbi from the pulpit. I fill up your car. That's what I do now. Many rabbis, Rabbi Rakefet, many times he says in the shir that most rabbis, when they retire, they become undertakers because they're tired of having the balabatim talk back to them. He said this. He said it only 100 times. Right, Mayor Yamaska? Right? You never say this? He said this 100 times. I heard him say this 100 times. Okay. Pasuk Vav, Yomar Elov Mohamako Israela Bein Yodecha. Pasuk Vav in Radak. What are these makas between your hands? Im Kane, Shein Atanovi Mo Hamako Israela Shabin Yodecha, Kiamako Sim Simon, Shahisa Misnabe of Yavicha Vimcha Hikucha, Visrucha Shaloi Tisnabe. The Radak is giving us an entirely different interpretation than we saw in Rashi and we saw in the Mitzudas David. They learned that this false prophet did one of two things. Either he was beaten by Bezdin, the Bezdin beat him, not his parents, or it was part of the ritual to gash themselves. And the Radak says something different. He doesn't talk about gashing himself in the service, in a religious service to an idol, and doesn't make any mention of the Bezdin, but puts the pasuk in the context that his parents were the ones who beat him, who hit him. What are you doing? Why are you fooling people? Va'amar, and he says, Asher hukesi beis me'ahavoy, yoymar, he will respond. Ein ha'makos ba'avur ha'nevu el o'yavai hikuni v'yisruni lefi sh'hayisi mishuloch v'lo ha'yisi mis'asek ba'avoydas ho'adama b'ne'u roisi. He says that I was beaten not by my parents, but I was beaten by other good people who wanted to set me on the right path. Because when I was a young man, I didn't work in a gas station. I wasn't a waiter. I wasn't a busboy. I didn't make deliveries for Glatmart. It's not what I do when I was a young man. When I was a young man, I was a rabbi. And I was a very bad rabbi. And I said very bad things. And a lot of people came and they beat me up. Can you imagine when the drush is over? You know, there are many rabbanim that have bulletproof lecterns. You know that? It's not a joke. There are many rabbanim that have bulletproof lecterns just in case, chas v'shalom, one of the balabatim don't like what the rabbi says. No, in Eretz Yisrael though, Ariyan is a child because of terrorists on the West Bank. It used to be, I don't know today, but it used to be, I remember this as a child, I remember hearing that in different territories in Eretz Yisrael, this goes back a long, long time ago, the settlers, they established the Medina, and the government in those days encouraged people to live in dangerous places, and said, we got your back. The only way we're going to take possession of this land is to have settlements. It was a different time. Okay, it was a different time when the government actually encouraged people to live in Gaza. And they said, we got your back. And when people lived in these very dangerous territories, it was very dangerous. It really was sakanas nefashos, and during davening, Rachmanu Litzlan, the terrorists can walk into shul, and they in the shul there were certain shelters that were bulletproof, and the rabbi's lectern was actually I remember hearing this story, was basically built very large, and in case in the front of the shul, not just for the rabbi, if a terrorist Rachmanu Litzlan would walk in, this was a safe barrier for the people in the front of the shul to hide behind this barrier. Okay, but over here, this person says, when I was a young man, I was a rabbi, and I would say things that were not proper, and people would beat me, would hit me, and that's why I have these wounds. It's not my parents. Next.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what did you say that they,
the
Radak says they were wearing sackcloth, which is...
Where does it say sackcloth? Where does it say sackcloth? Where? Which are that? Which page are you reading? Where are you reading? Which line? Tell me the line number.
Lo Yildashu Ode. Did you read that part?
Oh, I skipped. I'm sorry, I skipped. I made a mistake. Rabbi Sai, I made a mistake. I skipped by mistake. Let's go back. I didn't even realize I skipped. I know the Lo Yildashu. Let's go back to Pasuk Dalet. I made a mistake. Good you caught me. Thank you. Let's go back to Pasuk Dalet of Lo Yildashu. And that they'll be embarrassed because Yishlo Yiskai Menuvu Asam Yevoshu Behina Roy Sai. Okay, we did that. That, we, that next line back. That was the dictator Shir. The Lo Yildashu Oida Deresio Laman Kacheshki Chen Hoya Binagan Nevia Shekel Lubosh Sakim Via Deres Sear. Sackcloth.
This is different.
Then what I said yesterday. Yesterday we spoke about a coat or garb of fancy coat. No, it's
but
not. It's both. Well, the truth is, it's really both. It's like really, both. Because sometimes, for dramatic purposes, for theater, when they had something hard, they had something. No, it says two things.
There's something called wearing a hair shirt. It's an expression which means something that is irritating to the skin. And it's like that whipping that we talked about.
Yeah.
The flagellation that we talked about yesterday.
Goat skin. Sacking, right.
Sack
for Afer. Sack for Afer. Yutzah
l'rabim. Show how pious you are.
Right, so I think it's
all part. Which is different than wearing a fancy fur coat.
Right, so I think what he means over here is it means both, because let's assume that for dramatic purposes, when a prophet.
Oh, yeah.
When a prophet wants to give musr, so sometimes he wants to emphasize that we're in a lot of trouble. We have to do teshuva, and they put on sackcloth. And
so
when,
according the Abarpinel agrees with the 100%. He agrees with the Kimchi. He says, but he sakim. The reference to sakim is just ordinary street clothes. He, in other words, not dressed up like a fancy rabbi, so to speak, just dressed up in the shlach.
Okay.
Because I'm a worker, like you said, I'm a gas station.
Right, but
I wear garbage clothes.
But here he's saying, when this originally, look at the words of the Radak. Velo yilbishu od. They will no longer wear.
Yeah, wear the clothes that they normally wear.
Leman kachesh. So to lie, they would no longer make believe that they're prophets, and he says, "Ki chein hoya minhag nevi'ei hasheker." This was their custom when he was a navi sheker. They would wear lilboish sakim va'aderes seyar. So I am suggesting to you that a navi sheker has different costumes, different costumes. Okay, so that's Abarbanel. So Abarbanel is saying a different idea. Okay, he's saying, okay, I'm just reading what it says over here.
But he's saying this is what the Kimchi is saying.
Radak is saying?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. Okay, I don't know.
And he said the Radak is quoting his father.
Do you know the term a hair
shirt? Whatever the Radak
shirt?
Said, it's in the name of his own, of the Radak's father. He's saying the Radak is talking in the name of his father. He's repeating what his father told him, and he agrees with him, and this is what he's saying.
Okay, fine. So right now they're going to wear sakim, but in the past they wore fancy clothing to indicate their costume. All right, whatever. It's not important. Leman kachesh, leman sheyuchlu lekachesh v'yaminu b'chem b'nei adam ki hem marim atzman b'fnei b'nei adam shem perushim v'anoshim tzadikim v'yishorim v'lo yidavri kozov. They're phonies. A person like today, you go into shul, you're dressed up in a dark suit. like a penguin, a white shirt, a tie, and a jacket, and he wear a black hat. I'm a tzaddik. I'm a tzaddik. And if only people knew what's really going on under the hood, they wouldn't even let you walk into the shul. They wouldn't let this dress garb goes a long, long way. And when they see that their prophecies have not been come true, they'll be embarrassed. So here is something very interesting. It says that Laman Kachesh means, not like we learned until now. Until now we learned that Laman Kachesh means that when they were false prophets, they wore special clothing which gave them legitimacy, which was a tool to fool people so that they could lie. According to the Radak, that's not what it means. Laman Kachesh means now they are denying, they're so embarrassed of their history, they're denying that they ever were rabbis, they were ever false prophets in the past. They're not going to wear these clothing anymore. They're going to wear simple clothing so that if anyone says, oh, I recognize you, you used to be the prophet. So what are you talking about, the prophet? Look what I'm wearing. I'm wearing a t-shirt and jeans. I'm not a prophet. I was never a prophet. You must be confusing me with someone else. Leman Kachesh, they are going to lie today. They're going to lie.
That's what he's saying. That's what the Radak right. is saying.
They're going to lie today and say, I was never, ever.
He said they'll be embarrassed.
They're going to be embarrassed. Yeah, you want to erase your history. Pay, there are people that make a lot of money. People have you know, you look for a job, and you go to the employer, and you don't have a good history. So the potential employer types your name in Google. They type in your name in Google. And they, you know, it doesn't take much, and you see what it says there. So there are some people there are things that are on Google that are very embarrassing, and you don't want people to see. So what do? You hire their companies today that specialize in removing from Google things that you do not want people to know about. And it's basically almost impossible to do that. So you know what they do? This is what you pay people a lot of money for. You know what they do? They basically flood Google they make for you new profiles all over the place, and they flood it with content in order to suppress, to push down in the results to the third page all of the Lashon Hara, hoping that when you go to look for a job and someone types in your name, so they're going to be too lazy to get to the third page of the results. They'll only look at the first 30 results. At least the Lashon Hara should not be on page one. That's how the industry works. Let's go further. Therefore, they're going to lie today and say that we were never over there. We were never, ever false prophets, and therefore don't blame us. Okay, let's now jump down to the middle of the next Pasuk Vav, which we were up to. And over here, he says something very interesting. He says that the last line before the word Vitam, Shahoyu Oisrim Yodav Viraglov Kidesh Lo Yetse Lachutz. This is an amazing thing that he says. The reason why this fellow has on his hands marks, it's not because he was lashed, he got malkois by the Bezdin, or because he gashed himself when he went to a religious service for Avodah Zarah, because he was held in handcuffs and chains. He was basically imprisoned. And when a person was in prison in ancient times, they basically chained him down to a chair, to a cell. That's what they did in old times. Okay, I told someone, I don't understand, you go to a shul, I told this to a person, he could not stop laughing. I had to pick him up off the floor, almost literally. I told him, I don't understand, you open up the Aron HaKodesh, and there's beautiful Sifrei Torah, and they're all chained down. Like Guantanamo Bay, like the Sifrei Torah, they're prisoners of war. They're chained down to the Aron HaKodesh. That's how you treat a Sifrei Torah? When you open over there in HaKodesh, the Sifrei Torah, they're like prisoners of war, chained down to the wall? It's very strange, no? Isn't it very strange how we treat our Sifrei Torah? We chain them down. The reason why I'm telling you is because there was a Rav in Lakewood, and it blew my mind. I told this to you once, totally blew my mind. He made, you would never know, you come into his shul, he was Sifrei Rabbi Gissinger. Art Scroll published a beautiful biography of Rabbi Gissinger, who's a very holy rabbi, an amazing, amazing person. A Rav in Lakewood, it's an incredible book. I didn't read it, I read little sections of the book, I was blown away. And I had the good fortune to open up to the page where they described his Aron HaKodesh. He had a shul like any shul, probably smaller than the shul of Young Israel of Midwood. You look at the Aron HaKodesh, it looks like a regular Aron HaKodesh, nothing special. But he designed it. When you open up the Paroiches, and you open up the doors, you basically walk into a room. And this room has a chandelier. And has beautiful marble tiles, and has like the most beautiful book, the bookcases, beautiful bookcases, and on the bookcase are the Sifrei Torah, positioned like the same way you would put your Leichter and your Chanukah menorah and your silver holder for the Megillah. Everyone in their home, they have a beautiful buffet. And they open up the glass doors. You never came to someone's house and saw the Chanukah menorah chained down to the buffet. Did you ever see that? You come to someone's house and they have a beautiful dining room table, and they open up these glass, and the menorah is chained down as if it's a prisoner of war. Did you ever see that, Mark? You ever see someone have the poor Megillah and the glass in the silver colder, it's chained down, and the becher is nailed into the wall. Why in the world do we treat our Sifrei Torah as if they're prisoners of war in the Aron HaKodesh? Oh, they're gonna fall down. You don't want them to fall. You know, I have to fast. It happened. I know what happened once. I saw this happen once. Okay, so why don't you just make the Aron HaKodesh a little more comfortable? If you do that at home for your Leichter and for your Chanukah menorah and for your Megillah holder and for your Becher, so, and you're not, why can't you do that in shul? Why are the standards in shul so much less than the standards in your house? Make it comfortable for the Sefer Torah. They're not terrorists. A Sefer Torah is not a terrorist. So Gissinger, he was very sensitive to this. And he built this magnificent, it's not so expensive. You have a picture of it. It's a room. And it didn't take up any more space than a regular Aron Kodesh in any other shul. You wouldn't even know. Open up the Paroiches. There are French doors. And you open up the French doors. And you go into this little beautiful room with a chandelier, marble tile floor, beautiful book, like a bookcase, like the buffet, and beautiful shelves, very comfortable. The Sifrei Torah are not terrorists, and they're positioned b'derech kavod. It's unbelievable. And he said that the Aron HaKodesh has the same kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And once he started doing this, people came from all over Lakewood to his shul. When Rachmana Litzlan, the person, was in an ace tzara, and they wanted to daven to Hashem in privacy, and they would really, if they could, they would go to the Kaisel. If they were living in Eretz Yisrael, they would get on a bus and go to the Kaisel Hamaravi to be mispavel for a choyle, for a shidduch, to pour out their heart to Hashem. So he cites a chazal that the Aron HaKodesh has the same sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. But if you go to regular shul, there's no way to daven because, you know, you come to shul, so you stand in front of the Aron HaKodesh. This is a walk-in Aron HaKodesh. No one has to see you. You open the curtain or you close the curtain and there are doors behind the curtain. You open up the doors and you walk into the Aron HaKodesh, no one sees you. And you can sit there, maybe they even have a shtender in there. You can sit there. You sit down. Maybe I don't know. They'd be the same. Maybe not. Maybe you're not supposed to sit down. I don't know. Probably not. But you can stand there, and you can daven, and here you are in Eretz Yisrael. And they have a picture of this in the book, and it's not so. It's not so complicated. It's not so expensive. It blew my mind, that I can tell you. And it made me think, how come when you open up the Aronah Kodesh in every shul, you look at the Sifrei Torah and you say, Rachman is on you. I never knew our Sifrei Torah were terrorists chained down to the wall. Here in this pasuk, it says people are going to look at this, they're going to look at this Navi and they're going to say, what are those marks around your hands and feet? Look at your hands. Oh, I used to be a rabbi, and the Balabatim did not like what I said in my sermons. So every Shabbos morning at 8 o'clock before davening, they came to my house and they tied me up to prevent me from coming to shul and delivering a sermon. That's why I have these marks on my hand. I'm not making this up. That's what it says over here. That's exactly what it says. These were Nevi'i Sheker. They were tied up. Now we go to the next lines. The reason for this in Yilasid, Lefisha, Kelisbrach, Ye'odonu, Le'osid. The word Ye'odonu means encourage us. Me'odeid. Me'odeid means to encourage. Le'osid. Hashem is going to encourage us in the future. Ve'omar, V'hoyachrechein, Eshbech, Esruchi, Al-Kol Basar, V'nibu B'neichem, Uv'noisechem. It says in Yoel, we learned this once upon a time, that Hashem Kodesh is going to pour out a spirit of prophecy upon the Jewish people, and they will, and the children, even children will give over prophecy. He's saying over here something that is awesome. He's giving us some context. As we learned before, the Mitzvah Rashi were blown away. How could a Navi Sheker turn into a Navi Emes? How could Shabsai Tzvi become the Gadol Hador? Impossible. That's our question. So the Radak was obviously bothered by that question. Obviously. And he's coming to give us some explanation. Le'osilovo, Hashem will pour out an abundance of Ruach HaKodesh. But not everyone's going to make it. There are going to be many people that are going to excel and be able to reach a level of prophecy. But what about the other people? The B students. Not everyone is an A student. Did you ever see a politician that was an A student? Not everyone is. Are any politicians are A students? Any politicians? Ted Cruz, he's talking very, that's right, he's very good, Ted Cruz, he's good. And also Ron Paul, no?
Yeah.
Ron Paul's an A student. Can you give a speech like that yesterday? Take me a year to figure out all those terms, figure out what he said. It's pretty good. And he's not a doctor, he has no...
What do you mean?
He's a doctor?
Of course he's a doctor.
Oh, I don't know, okay, he's a medical doctor, Ron Paul? Okay, now I understand. Such fluency. Incredible bakias in the science of COVID. Amazing his drasha yesterday. In any event, here we have over here the times of Mashiach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to pour upon the Jewish people a shefa, an abundance of Ruach HaKodesh, but not everyone's going to make the cut. Not everyone is an A student, and the B students are going to be jealous. They're going to be kinas soifrim tar bechochma. It's a healthy jealousy. Kinas soifrim. But unfortunately, it's going to go too far. And it's going to lead to sin. And the sin is those that do not make it are going to cheat. Terrible avera. And they're going to make believe they're also prophets. Because you got to keep up with the cones. Okay? You got to keep up with the cones, with the people that are prophets. And the parents, yeah?
But my question is, prophecy.
I'm calling this a question, yeah?
Prophecy has different forms, what I mean, and different roles. If we're talking about the predicting the future prophecy, that's not necessarily what this is talking about.
Right, in Chanami.
It's talking about access to
Ruach HaKodesh, whatever it means.
Torah,
Right.
Which was the role of the, which was a role of the Navi in the old days, and that's possible.
It's not the Chazal said there were 1.2 million prophets in Jewish history. Kiflayim miyotzei Mitzrayim. Yotzei Mitzrayim is 600,000 men in the age of 20 and above. Double Yotzei Mitzrayim with the number of Nevi'im that gave over prophecy in the history of the Jewish people, 1.2 million. How many of those prophets do we know about? 48. That's a very small number. 48 out of 1.2 million. Why? Because everyone else, the prophecy was not relevant for the future. It was relevant only for the time, not for the future. Therefore, it's not recorded. There's going to be more like that. Not every prophet's going to be, not every person that's a prophet that merits this kind of prophecy is prophecy earth-shattering that it needs to be put up on Facebook. Not everyone's prophecy is that level. But nevertheless, people, individuals will have this kirvas elokim, a closeness to Hashem, where they will be able to communicate directly with Hashem or see things that are going to be very, very powerful. And there are those that are not going to make the cut, and they're going to be very jealous. And this jealousy is going to be so intense that rachmana litzlan, it's going to lead to an avera, where there are going to be people that are going to be fakers. Children are going to be fakers. They cannot keep up with their peers, and they're going to make believe that they're also prophets. And the parents are going to say, excuse me, you're not a prophet. Your older brother, he's an A student. You're not an A student. Don't worry, so you're not a prophet. It's also good. So it's okay. It's okay not to be a prophet. Don't try to be who you are not. That's the message of life. Don't try to be who you're not. Don't try to pretend. I tell you the story. I love this story so much. My barrel wine. It's my favorite story from my barrel wine. There's a fellow who wrote a book called Vintage Wine. Isn't that a great name for a book? My barrel wine did not write this book. This fellow, one of his balabatim, who loves his rabbi, he listened to all of his lectures and shiurim, and he collected things that he enjoyed very much. And he asked Rabbi Wein to write the foreword of the book. What Rabbi Wein wrote in the foreword is better than the whole book put together. Mm-hmm. And what did he write in the foreword? This is unbelievable story. Shem Musa Haskell, I told this to you probably a few times here. And the story is, he was once on a plane, and he was going somewhere very important, and the stewardess came to serve the meal, and it's not Elal, a non-kosher airline, but he ordered kosher food, and the stewardess came by and said, I ordered kosher food, you know those tin little cans, double warm Meal Mart, can you? So she's okay, let me go look, and she comes back and she says, I'm sorry. I looked through the entire list. There is no kosher food for wine. The only kosher food is for cats. I'm sorry. But you know something? I don't see any cats on the plane. No kittens and no cats. So you could have it. Okay, very good. So he ate the food. He comes to the function. He does his thing. And now he's on the way back. He's on the way back. And deja vu, he sees the stewardess coming near him. They're serving food. They're serving the meal. He remembers that on the way here, there was no wine. There was a cat's. So he says to himself, since it was a return flight, he booked the flight back and forth. It's the same mistake. So the stewardess, he says, is there kosher food for me? Kosher food? Yeah, we have kosher food. What's your name? Let me get it. What's your name? So he made this. If on the way here there was no wine, there was a cat. So he says, my name is Katz. Okay, Mr. Katz. One moment. She comes back and she says, I'm sorry. There's no cats. We don't have any food labeled for kosher food labeled for cats. The only kosher food we have here is labeled for a wine. A wine. Okay, I'll take wine's food. And our barrel wine said, this is awesome what he said, this is a mashal for life. In life, what happens? We're always trying to make believe who we are not. We're chasing after cats. I want to be cats. I'm wine. I want to be cats because I want that food. You're trying to mold yourself in the image of cats. And then the day finally comes where they call your name. It's now time for wine to step up to the plate and achieve his purpose in this world. But you know what happens? Because your whole life you try to become cats, when they call your name, is there a wine? There is no wine. You're cats. You lose out. The day will come when they will call your name. But if you try to chase after someone else's name and become someone else, then when the day finally comes when they will call your name, you're going to lose out. You'll never be cats. That will never happen. But because of the nonsense in your mind, think that you could become cats, you forfeit who you really are. And Hashem has in store for every single person a place to achieve what they are supposed to be. And because people are foolish and trying to become other people, when their day finally does come, you're not around. You're not around. That's the mashal of this story. That's what he said. And that's what he wrote in the foreword of this book. And I always echoes in my head. It's a very powerful mashal. Now going back over here to this thing over here, it's exactly what happens over here. Loss of love. The parents say to the child, "My child, you're jealous of your brother. He's a prophet, and you're not a prophet. You're a liar. Don't do that. That's a crime. Don't try to be who you are not." Okay, it totally puts the Radak has done for us an enormous toiva. He puts the pasuk in a whole new perspective of where we can relate to the pasuk. It's not like when we started before, it was extremely difficult to understand this pasuk, and he comes, he gives us a whole explanation. Let me read again very quickly one more time for the word v'tam. I'm on page 841, pasuk vav. The words a few lines down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down. Hashem will encourage the Jewish people in the future by bestowing upon them a blessing, a shefa, an abundance of Ruach HaKodesh, to give the individual, every ordinary person, the ability to become a prophet. But not every person is going to make it. Those that don't make the cut, the B students, yikanu ba'achedim, are going to be jealous of their peers. She yisnabu v'yasu. And so what are they going to do? They're going to make believe. They're not going to be able to be oyem b'nesoyon. They're going to she yisnabu v'yasu. They're going to do a terrible avera. V'yasu atzvam neviim k'mo ha'acherim. But however, v'yakiru avoysam hashaimim. But their parents, no, my child, what are you doing? You're not your brother. The Yishma Avoysam Yakirum Nivuasam Vashit Shekhar Vyomulukham Avoysam Losikhya. Don't you realize you're going down a path that will lead to death? Because a Navi Shekhar dies. Kisikhya Kishekhar Dibarta Mashem Hashem. Unbelievable. He puts the entire thing in a whole new perspective. And the parents probably beat them up as well. Don't do this. Vadoini Avizal Perashun Yazilasalov Bismatriasamesim. Now that Adar Kedarko, he quotes his father, he gives kavod to his father by telling us anupshat. You give kavod. It's interesting. I went to this event on Sunday. I was very moved. There's one thing I was very impressed this past Sunday. Every once in a while, I volunteer for Torah anytime. Hardly do it anymore because they've grown to such a degree they don't need me. They don't want me. They're very desperate for Sunday for some reason. And you go to these events. There are different rabbanim. So one rav speaks, another rav speaks. So it's very common. We have a rav who speaks. He's an elderly person. He needs help. He needs help to get up the steps to the podium. Many times they're older rosh yeshivas. So who helps the rosh yeshiva, the elderly people who need help getting to the podium, sitting down? It's sometimes even me, a technician, one of the technicians. Someone like me, you know, whatever, you have to put the microphone, this, that, so you help them up. Or sometimes they come with gaboyim.
Right.
Some they come with family members, and the family member helps them ascend the podium, things like that. So Rabbi Dishon, he shall live and be well. Baruch Hashem, from the Ziknei Hador, he's not a young man, no secret, he's not a young man. And he needs, you know, he needs help. It's not easy for him. And he came there, and we right away plan, he's going to sit down. He's not going to stand. He's going to sit. I was told he's going to come in a wheelchair. I don't think he came in. He came by himself, and he said no. He wants to stand, and he came with a gabbai. I don't know. Maybe it was one of his family members. I don't know who it was. And I was there, and it was the person that I was working with. He was there, and the one that wanted to help him and just pushed us all away and told all of us, get lost. Me, David Piner, he's the one that I work with from Turning Time, and his son, whoever the Gabbai was Rabbi Moshe, Rav Moshe Tuvilif, the Rav of the Shul. The Rav of the Shul, he just pushed us away and says, I got this here. This is my place, my job. And Imamish, she took him like a child. And he took him up to the bima, took him down. I was very moved that the Rav himself, this is what I do. We have here from the Zakeni Hadar, I'm going to be the one that's going to help him up the steps and get him to where he needs to be. None of you guys. This is what I wanted. I never saw that before. And I was very impressed. It was a very bakovetic thing to give kovet. You don't lose when you give kovet. No one ever gave you a frask for giving someone a compliment. Never happened. And here, we have here the Radak from all the Mefarshim. He always gives cover to his father. Always does that.
Yeah.
That itself is powerful musr. By quoting your father, whether you like what your father said or you don't like what your father said. Maybe he didn't like what his father said. He doesn't quote the Barbanel. Well, he lived a lot before the Abarbanel, okay? He lived way before the Abarbanel. He doesn't quote these people. Why not? They had nothing good to say. I'm sure they were good to say. I don't like what you have to say, so I'm not gonna repeat it in your name. But his father, this is my duty. I give cover to my father. I'm gonna take what my father says, whether you like it, whether I like it or not. It's a very, this musr in just reading something like this, the Adoini Ovizal, even how you refer to your father. Everything is a lesson in everything. Every nuance in life, there's a lesson. The Adoini Ovizal Peirash Unyan Kazel, Le'osilovai, Bizman Trias HaMesim, a whole new era. We're talking about Trias HaMesim, which is already, you know, off the charts. You're going Trias HaMesim already by me, you hear the Trias HaMesim. It means you're already in a whole different time of the world, which you really, you know, it almost shuts you down almost. You can't relate to this anymore. You want to go to Achras Hayamim? All right, maybe we can relate to Achras Hayamim if we're still alive, right? If we're here. You want to go to Trias Amesim already, supernatural time. It's already hard to relate to. The lost love of you. Amar Kikesh Sheyichu Hamesim Kamoshu Kasev Sefer Daniel V'Rabim Yisheni Ad Masar Ofar Yokitzu will wake up. This was the pasuk I told you from Rabbi Shimon Schwab. Some people are going to have Trias HaMesim for the tzaddikim gemurim l'chay olam ve'ele l'charafos for cursing. We turn the page. L'dir oin olam day ro'oin. That's a very good word. Page 843. Day ro'oin. You know what that word means? That was the word that Rabbi Shimon Schwab zechet tzaddik Levracha selected to use for the Holocaust. We have many shiurim on this. How do you refer to this, I don't even know what to call it, this event that happened approximately 75 years ago? How do you, what do you call it?
The end of Yonah, right?
The Shoah?
Yeah.
End of Yishayah. You call it the Shoah? You call it the Holocaust? Churban? It's impossible. It's impossible to find a word that can capture this horrific event. What are you going to call it? A horror? There's no word in the language, in any language, that can capture what happened 75 years ago. There's no word. There's nothing. What are you going to say? Okay, so we don't have a choice. You gotta pick a word, right? You don't got a choice. You gotta live, right? You have to breathe. So we call it the Shoah. No one has a problem with that. I don't know anyone that has a big problem. The Shoah, the Holocaust, Chorban, whatever you want, fine. I got it. Rav Shimon Schwab, Derech Agav, when he wrote a kina for the Holocaust, the word he selected was Deiraon. He took a word from Tanakh, from the end of Yeshaya, V'hoyu Deiraon L'chol Basar. And Rashi there says it's a composite of two words, Dai Re'ia. Like Dai means enough. Re'ia is to behold. Meaning, the two words together, it's Rashi says this, it is impossible to even comprehend. Dai means it's beyond me. Dai, dayenu, enough. It's more than, ra'on, re'ia means to see, to behold. It's a biblical word. It's in Yeshaya. Dei v'hoyu is referring to Melchemes Goygumam, referring to the utter obliteration of our enemies. And we will look at their dead bodies, we will enter a state where we will respond with the word, with I can't even look at this.
That's what I think it is, yeah.
So it's amazing, his brilliance. He selected that word in Yeshaya as the word that he, Derech Agav, in the Kina that he composed to refer to this event. Okay, which we call Holocaust and Shoah, which is, he also called it the Holocaust, I have no doubt, he also called it the Shoah, he also called it the Holocaust, he also called it the Chorban, he also used all the same words that everyone else used, which you can go do a whole study of when these words came into existence, who selected them, how they became popular, v'chulu, but in the Kina that he composed to mourn and to express pain over what happened, that's the word he selected. He did not select in his king the word Shoah, did not select the word Chorban, he selected the word Dei Ra'on. It's a powerful, powerful word. And here he's writing over here in this page 843, L'dir'oin Oilam. We're talking about after Techiya Sameisim. There are some people that are going to come back to this world for what? To live forever. To Oilam, there's going to be some Tainug in this world. And then he says this idea, which he himself explained in Yeshaya, they're going to be Rishoim, that are going to have Tchiyas HaMesim. You know why they're going to have Tchiyas HaMesim? Because the fires of Gehenna are not hot enough there. The fires of Gehenna will not be sufficient to do these wicked people justice. Only in this world can you be tortured to such a degree where a Rasha can receive his full punishment. So he needs to come back. We see Rachmanot, we see people suffer in this world. It's unbelievable. Some of the suffering that's out there in this world is just not to be believed. And you think about this idea that he says, which is obviously a very controversial idea, that only the Tzadikim Gemurim and the Rishoim Gemurim are going to need to come back to this world, because the only place that can really give a person pure enjoyment is this world. And the only place that can give a person pure punishment is this world. And that's what it says here about some people will come back for Lidir Oin Oilam, Dei Ra'on, for this horrific type of whatever this is, Dai Re'ia, an eternal Dai Re'ia. Oysam Shekafru Be'ikar, who are these people? The people that were Koifer Be'ikar, the Chafru B'tchiyah Sameisim, who are those people that they were Koifrim? In Hakadosh Baruch Hu and in Tchias Amesim, the Oysam Beinonim Shelo Kafu BeIkar Ach Hayu Cholmim Chaloyim Hashaker, people that were false prophets. The Amru Nevuah Milibam Ach Loy Avru Avoy Dezara. Okay, there are people that delivered false prophecy, but did not actually worship idols.
Okay, where's the quote?
Kishayichyu yiyu bidehem makos, when they will come back to life, they will be in their hands makos, kamay makos shchin oy garov, v'zeye sochor lip ulasoy. This will be the reward, the onshoy, al shesnabi b'shek kdei shiakiru b'nei adam v'yiloi b'yishas. It's an incredible idea what he's saying. That there are going to be wicked people that are going to come back with defects on their body. And their defects on their body is going to be a telltale sign that they committed crimes in their previous lifetime. And when they walk the streets and everyone sees these boils, gora of these different things, this is part of the punishment. What's the punishment? Shame. Shame, busha, is the opposite of kavod. We all know that the ultimate reward is, to a degree, this principle called honor, kavod. What is the opposite of kavod? The opposite is boishes. And these individuals will come back Trias and Mesim, with defects on their body, which will be a clear sign of their horrible sins. And that's what it says when they come back. Over here, he's seeing that the sakim are going to be beautiful clothing, it seems. So maybe, like we said before, it means like sackcloth. No, the oivdei. They're going to be so embarrassed, they're going to have to lie. Exactly what we say, said before. In the base medrash, they hit me. For what? I wasn't a good student. My Rebbe gave me a frask. That's why I have a mark. They're gonna lie. What has happened to your hands? It's because of my sins. Okay, let's leave that. I'm not sure what he means by that. I have to really analyze what the Targum means, but let's leave that. We'll leave that for now. The point over here is, according to the Radak, the Radak's father is saying something very similar to what the Radak said. The only difference is the Radak's father is pushing the timeline to after Techiyas HaMesim. The Radak's father is mama saying the same thing as the Radak. The Radak is saying that with children, who are Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to bring upon children a Ruach of Nevuah. Some will make it, some will not make it. The ones that are not going to make it are going to be jealous. And they're going to become Nevi'ei Sheker, and the parents are going to catch them and say, "What are you doing? You're not cut out for this. Don't worry. Don't try to be who you're not." And the parents are going to hit them to stop them. The Radak's father is doing the same exact thing, but just saying is that not children, people that actually would be a sheker, they're going to come back after the Trias HaMesim. For what purpose? Not for good. They're not going to come back. See, this is a very powerful idea. This really was Rav Schwab showing. Rav Schwab, and he's telling us a principle which I think most people never heard of, and they can't comprehend. That there is Techiyas HaMesim for the wicked. The average person, when you hear about the concept of Techiyas HaMesim, it's only for the righteous. The tzaddikim, they merit to come back to this world to serve Hashem more, to be Oved Hashem another chance. The Rishayim, they're gone. They're gone, they're never coming back. No. The Radak makes it very clear that there is Techiyas HaMesim for certain types of wicked people to come back in this world in order to be punished. Person thinks he can escape. He can escape his crimes by committing suicide, by dying. You're not going to escape. Hashem will bring you back. He'll bring you back to life. And you'll stand trial in front of the whole world for your crimes. And you'll be humiliated to a degree that will be unbearable. That's a very difficult principle to swallow. It's a very difficult, there's a very much more sophisticated understanding of Trias HaMesim, which they certainly do not teach you in kindergarten. And with that, we're going to take a short break, and we'll discuss today some of the halachos and the Seder Hayoim of the next following days coming towards Matan Torah Seinu.
Long time no see. How are you doing in Philadelphia?